Hello and welcome to DNA Today. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. The show's packed with new stories and lessons, all to keep you updated and educated with the ever-changing world of genetics. And I want to remind everyone that I'm still broadcasting through winter break, so you can continue tuning in Mondays at 1 p.m. on whus.org or 91.7. Today, I'm going to be talking about an interesting news story about telomere length, and that's the protective ends of chromosomes. And this telomere length is in response to different mental health levels of cancer patients and the support groups they have. So that's the first thing we'll get into. Later in the program, I'll talk about a genetic disorder, Klinefelter syndrome, and we'll talk about the symptoms, how it happens, how they're different from normal healthy males, and how frequent it is, and lots of things like that. So we got a good show for today. So let's jump into this news story. A study finds medicating... A study finds that meditating cancer patients are able to affect the makeup of their DNA. The body and mind appear inextricably linked, and findings from a new study published in Cancer by Canadian groups suggest that our mental state has a measurable physical influence on us, and more specifically on our DNA. And the study was conducted using breast cancer patients, and these patients were in a support group involvement and practiced mindfulness meditation. And this mindfulness meditation is an adapted form of Buddhist meditation in which practitioners focus on present thoughts and actions in a non-judgmental way, ignoring past judges and future concerns. So they're really just in the moment and ignoring other stresses in the past or in the future, and just really being in that moment. And these patients are associated with preserved telomere length. And telomeres are the area at the end of our chromosomes that act as caps, protecting the chromosomes from unraveling. And I like to compare telomeres to aglets, which are the little plastic ends at the end of your shoelaces. And those plastic ends prevent the shoelace from becoming all frayed. And it serves the same purpose with chromosomes. The telomeres are protecting and maintaining their structure and preventing it from unraveling, just like a shoelace. And these telomeres wither with age and are found to be shorter in cancer patients and also people that have heart disease and high stress levels. And it's really associated with disease that shorter telomeres mean, that this person is highly stressed or have a disease or something that they're not healthy. And having long, intact telomeres is very important to be healthy. So long telomeres are good and short telomeres are bad, to put it bluntly. So lead investigator Dr. Linda E. Carlson and her colleagues conducted a study of 88 distressed breast cancer survivors, and they divided these patients into three groups. So the first group was assigned to an 8-week cancer recovery program consisting of mindfulness, meditation, and yoga. Now the second group was sent for 12 weeks of a group therapy in which they shared difficult emotions and fostered social support and really, really that group therapy. And the third group served as a control group who received just a 6-hour stress management course, pretty standard. So again, the first two groups were very focused on the group therapy aspect in sharing and having that solid support system. And before and after the study, the patient's telomere length was measured and studied through their blood. And the study concluded that the first two groups I mentioned that had hefty support systems, their telomere length stayed consistent and was maintained. And that's what we like to hear. We like to hear long telomeres, maintained telomeres. As long as it's not shortening, that's kind of a good sign. The third group, who had significantly less support and served as the control, had shorter telomere lengths, and that's not good. So the group that really didn't have a really good support system had less, their telomere length was much shorter. And so this is interesting to see that this dynamic, that the healthier mindset you have and you feel like you're being supported by other people and you're having an impact on other people's lives, you're supporting them, really has a high impact on your stress levels. And, you know, if you're in a group therapy session and you see that other people are going through the same thing as you and that you can relate to each other and support each other, you're probably going to be less stressed, less anxious, and because of that, your telomere length is going to stay maintained or even be longer, as I'll mention later. But shorter telomeres are associated with stress and anxiety and all of these things that can contribute to disease and make it even worse. There's kind of that old thing of that laughter is the best medicine, and that can kind of be applied here because, you know, being with other people and being supported by them has a really, really positive impact on someone's recovery and their own health. So it really does show the relationship between these two, the correlation, and how important it really is that, yes, there's traditional medicine of pills and things like that, but, you know, having a support group really should not be overlooked. And it's interesting because similar studies have been conducted that show this relationship between stress levels and telomere length in cancer patients. These are kind of focused on cancer patients. And one study led by diet and lifestyle guru, Dr. Dean Ornish from 2008, reported that a combination of a vegan diet, stress management, aerobic exercise, and participation in a support group for 3 months resulted in an increased telomerase activity, telomerase, so that's the enzyme ACE. ACE usually means, the suffix ACE usually means an enzyme. And he was looking at men with prostate cancer. And so again, telomerase is the enzyme that maintains the telomere. So they kind of take care of those little ends of the chromosome that is maintaining the chromosome. And what telomerase does is it adds DNA to the ends of our chromosome. So it's actually making the telomeres longer, which again, is a good thing. That's very healthy and it's very, very good for the person. Now, Ornish had a follow-up study of prostate cancer patients a couple years later and found the same thing, had the same conclusion that a lifestyle interventions are associated with longer telomeres. So, you know, you can throw a bunch of pills at something, but, you know, there is another aspect to it that is very important, and that's the mental health of the patient. And if they believe they're going to get better and they are trying hard and really being strong, then, you know, I do believe that, you know, these studies are showing, and I believe that it really does make an impact on, you know, the health of the person and, you know, what their recovery is going to be like. And there's far more benefits than longer telomeres from medication. Earlier work by Carlson, who again conducted the breast cancer research I just mentioned, she discovered that in cancer patients, mindfulness is associated with healthier levels of stress hormone cortisol and a decrease in compounds that promote inflammation. And she points out, quote, generally healthy people in a work-based mindfulness stress reduction program have been shown to produce higher antibody titers to the flu vaccine than controls. And there's been promising work looking at the effects of mindfulness in HIV and diabetes, end quote. And past findings also show that high stress levels increase the risk of viral infections, including the common cold, as well as depression and cardiovascular disease. So really that mindfulness is very, very key. And it's great seeing studies that look at this and not just other forms of medication. And this is kind of a contemporary form, but we can see that it really does make an impact. And the therapeutic potential of the mind-body intersect is well known. So the feedback, biofeedback, is a technique you can use to learn to control your body's functions, such as your heart rate. And with biofeedback, you're connected to an electrical sensor that help you receive information, feedback, about your body. Bio, so biofeedback. And this is used to treat things such as headaches and high blood pressure. And the placebo effect also has a key role. And there are psychobiological benefits achieved from a patient's expectations of treatment rather than the treatment itself. Again, that's what I'm talking about. Of if you think you're going to get better, you have a better chance of getting better because you're believing it. You're working hard too. You're not kind of in this depression state where they're biologically and chemically you are different. And so you can really have an impact on yourself. And Carlson shares her thoughts on the study saying, quote, the meaning of the maintenance of telomere length in this study is unknown. However, I think that processing difficult emotions is important for both emotional and physical health. And this can be done both through group support with Emotional Express and through mindfulness meditation practice, end quote. And she also shared that she wonders if mentally rooted telomeric changes are long lasting and if the same patterns would hold true in other cancers and conditions. What I've mentioned so far is breast cancer and prostate cancer that both kind of supports this idea that you know, if you have a healthy mindset and you are processing your emotions in a healthy way, that it will have a positive impact on your treatment and on your getting better. And she's really looking at the effects of mental intervention and if it would be offered at the same time of diagnosis and treatment, all questions she hopes to pursue in further research. And if she comes out with further research, I'm sure I'll be talking about it, tweeting about it, and all that stuff. And according to a report published by Harvard Medical School in 2011, 6.3 million Americans were using mind-body therapies at the advice of conventional doctors, and a surprisingly high number that surely has since grown. And, you know, this is a lot of people, 6.3 million, and this is back 3 years ago in 2011. And doctors are saying, yeah, like, you know, be in a support group, be able to process your emotions, be able to really look at what you're feeling and how you can change things. You're really stressed. How can we change that? So really, you know, this kind of traditional therapy is being applied to traditional medicine, and kind of the combining of these two can have a really, really positive, huge impact on the person's development and being able to get better. So the genetic disorder I'm talking about this week is Klinefelter syndrome. It's also known as Klinefelter syndrome, or as 47XXY or XXY. And this is a genetic disorder that's caused by an extra X chromosome in a male. And that is where the number 47 comes from. So as a healthy typical humans have 46 chromosomes, males affected by Klinefelter syndrome have an extra chromosome, making their number of chromosomes 47 instead of 46. That extra X chromosome is bumping their number up from 46 to 47. The letters that follow the numbers are sex chromosomes a person has. So for a healthy male, this is read 46XY. But for a male affected by Klinefelter syndrome, it reads 47XXY, since again, there's an extra X chromosome present. And that's the difference between, you know, a normal, healthy male and a male affected by Klinefelter syndrome is that extra X chromosome. That's very important. And although the individual affected by the disorder is usually referred to as male, as I've been, their physical appearance may be male, female, or intersex due to the sex chromosomes they have. So to be a male, a human must have a Y chromosome. And to be a female, a human must have two X chromosomes. And people affected by Klinefelter syndrome have both an X two X chromosomes and a Y chromosome, which kind of satisfies both requirements for both sexes. So because of this satisfying both of them, they can have an array of different phenotypes of, you know, male to female, intersex, and all of that. Because of the sex chromosomes they have, their phenotype is affected by this, the way they look, their physical appearance. Now, just wanted to note this, that Klinefelter syndrome should not be confused with XYY chromosome or syndrome. So that's, just as the name explains, it's two Y chromosomes and only one X chromosome. Now, Klinefelter's has two X chromosomes and one Y. So it's really the opposite there. But Klinefelter syndrome is not XYY syndrome. That is a completely different syndrome. And today I'm just talking about Klinefelter syndrome. So how prevalent is Klinefelter syndrome? Well, it's about 1 in 500 to 1 in 1,000 male live births. Now, however, these numbers should be taken with a grain of salt because many people do not show symptoms and they may not be included in these numbers. So they are very raw numbers and unfortunately not very exact because people can go on living with Klinefelter's and not be diagnosed. So what are the symptoms that comes with Klinefelter syndrome? I keep kind of referring to these symptoms, but what are they? Well, when a young affected males can have weaker muscles and reduced strength. And when they're older, they tend to actually be a little taller than average. Muscle control and coordination can also be a struggle compared to other males. And as one can imagine, it's during puberty that these symptoms become more apparent. Now, due to the presence of the second X chromosome, these males produce less testosterone than other males. Now, testosterone is a very a male hormone. And the lack of testosterone causes less muscular body, less facial and body hair, and broader hips, kind of more female features. While teenagers affected males of Klinefelter syndrome may develop breast tissue and also have weaker bones and a lower energy level than other males. So these aren't really huge symptoms that can really affect a person's quality of life, but they are symptoms, and they kind of distinguish between average healthy males. And once adulthood commences, Klinefelter males and typical healthy males appear very similar. Again, the only big difference being that Klinefelter males are a little bit taller on average. And genochromastia is present to some extent in about a third of affected individuals, and a slightly higher percentage than in the XY population, the healthy male population. So what is genochromastia? It's a benign enlargement of breast tissue in males, and so they have kind of breast growth, and because of their, you know, two X chromosomes, that they have these female features. And only about 10% of Klinefelter males have to, that their breast enlargement is noticeable enough that they may choose to have cosmetic surgery just for pure looks. There's nothing health related to it, that, you know, they're not in danger or anything, just cosmetic reasons. Now, XXY men, Klinefelter men, also may have microcordisium, which means that they have smaller than normal testicles, and some degree of language learning or reading impairment may be present as well. And neuropsychology testing also reveals deficits in executive functioning, although these deficits can also become overcome through early intervention. And one of the most detrimental symptoms is infertility, and affected males are often infertile or may have reduced fertility. Now, there is hope of having biological children through advanced reproductive assistance, and this may not work for every person, but some find success. By 2010, over 100 successful pregnancies have been reported using in vitro fertilization technology with surgically removing sperm material from males with Klinefelter syndrome. So there is hope that Klinefelter, people affected by Klinefelters can still have biological children. And obviously the technology is always advancing, and they're, especially with in vitro fertilization, that is a main way of really being able to, for couples that cannot have children, not just Klinefelter people, but really lots of different type of people that have fertility issues. So that's a really cool thing to look into. And I'll probably talk about it on shows to come. Males affected by Klinefelters tend to be more affected by problems that affect females more than males. So kind of female, more health problems, kind of tagged as female problems. Now, remember that Klinefelter males have two X chromosomes just like females, which is believed to be the causation of all of these kind of female traits and female heavy health problems and things like this. And these diseases include autoimmune disorders, breast cancer, venous thrombotic disease, and osteoporosis. So how does someone know if they have Klinefelter syndrome? Well, sometimes it is possible to categorize the XXY males based on physical characteristics. However, physical characteristics, as I said before, can differ greatly among people affected. Some can appear very female and have a lot of female features, where some can appear mostly male. And the only reliable method is getting a karyotype testing done. And to refresh your memory, a karyotype testing is when a picture is taken of all your chromosomes while they're in their condensed form during mitosis. And these chromosomes are arranged from biggest to smallest, with the sex chromosomes at the end. And again, we have 23 pairs of chromosomes in a healthy, typical human. So this layout of the different chromosomes and going from biggest to smallest helps the diagnoser to see if there's any extra missing chromosomes or chromosome pieces. Sometimes you'll be missing a whole chromosome, or you'll have a whole extra chromosome. Maybe there's another piece to something that they can see, hey, look, you know, this number of chromosome looks a little bit longer than usual. Let's kind of look at this a little bit better. So it really kind of helps just look at that first glimpse of what your chromosomes are looking like, and if there are anything big that's different. You know, obviously a karyotype can't pick up, oh, this gene is different, but it really looks at the physical look of the chromosomes and just being able to see if there's anything different in those. And in the past, the observation of bar bodies was a common practice as well. And bar bodies are inactivated X chromosomes. Talked about this in the last episode because from the UConn presentation, I think it was Dr. Chadwick, I want to say, don't quote me on that. He has done work on X chromosomes and inactivating X chromosomes and looking at that gene dosage of, because females have two X chromosomes and males typically have one X chromosome, the proteins produced from this, the genes that are activated from this, are different levels because females have twice as much as males. So females inactivate one of their X chromosomes, and that inactivated X chromosome is referred to as a bar body. And these bar bodies can be kind of identified through tests. And so if a person has a bar body, we know that they have two X chromosomes. So this is a really, really great tool for Klinefelters, because Klinefelter males have two X chromosomes and therefore they have a bar body. Now, a bar body is in each one of their cells, And these are inactivated X chromosomes, as I said, and they differ in each cell, meaning that not all cells have the same X chromosome inactivated. A cell, you know, maybe in your eye could have your first X chromosome inactivated, and then the same cell in your eye could also have a different X chromosome inactivated. So it really does differ. And again, the purpose of an inactivated X chromosome is to prevent too much X chromosome gene from being expressed, because in males, they only have one X chromosome. And in females, we have two. So because of this, we have double, but we don't want double the genes being expressed. So that's why one of the X chromosomes is inactivated. It's not being expressed. And Klinefelter males have two X chromosomes in each of their cells. So just like females, they need one of the X chromosomes in each cell to be inactivated. And again, this is a bar body, and only females have bar bodies. So if a male shows up on a test as having a bar body, we know he has an extra X chromosome, just like in Klinefelter syndrome. And that's kind of a big red flag of, okay, something's different here. And about 10% of Klinefelter cases are found by prenatal diagnosis. And other cases are often found during childhood, and even more frequently in puberty, because again, puberty is when all of these, most of the symptoms really become more apparent, because the child is kind of becoming an adult. And because of that, a lot of the different features start showing up. So what is the cause of the Klinefelter syndrome? We know that it's this extra X chromosome, but how does someone get an extra X chromosome? Well, males affected, again, have these two X chromosomes and one Y chromosome. So they have one extra sex chromosome. So knowing this, we come to the conclusion that this extra X chromosome is caused by a non-disjunction of chromosomes. Now, this might sound like a fancy term, but non-disjunction means that there's a failure to separate chromosomes. So for the father's sperm, this could have happened during meiosis one, and recall that there are two subprocesses of meiosis, conveniently named meiosis one and meiosis two, and these processes are done to yield an egg or sperm for reproduction. This is all to make a baby. And so in the cause of Klinefelter's, it could be a sperm cell that has both an X and Y chromosome, and then when it meets an egg, with the egg has its own X chromosome, the baby ends up having two X chromosomes and one Y chromosome, making them a male affected by Klinefelter's. So again, it's the non-disjunction of chromosomes that causes Klinefelter syndrome. And this doesn't have to happen in just the father. It could happen in the mother too, where the mother is contributing two X chromosomes and the father is contributing one Y chromosome, and then we end up with a Klinefelter child. And so it's the failure of the chromosomes to separate during meiosis. And this could happen as well in the mother. So it's contributing one more sex chromosome than really needs to be there. And unfortunately, there's no treatment to stop Klinefelter syndrome. There are things that I mentioned before of cosmetic surgery. If there's breast enlargement, there is... For reproduction purposes, you can use IVF, in vitro fertilization, but these are kind of things to help kind of aid in a person's quality of life, not so much treating the actual disorder or syndrome. And most people with Klinefelter syndrome lead a healthy, independent life. They may experience hardship socially for being a little bit different, but support system of loved ones goes a very long way. And the results of a study carried out on 87 Australian adults with the syndrome shows that those who have a diagnosis and appropriate treatment from a very young age had a significant benefit with respect to those who had been diagnosed in adulthood, because, you know, they kind of understand, this is what I have, this is why I'm different, and, you know, that can go a long way, and really just having answers can really help in understanding why you're different. And a 1985 publication identified a greater mortality, mainly due to diseases of an aortic valve, in Klinefelter-affected individuals. Also, development of tumors and possible hemorrhages, reducing life expectancy to about 5 years. Now, later studies have reduced this estimate to about 2.1 years. And these results are still questioned data and they're not absolute. Definitely need further testing, but it's not like it's 20 years, so it's not as serious, but it's still, there is evidence that there are other health effects due to this extra X chromosome. And this is one of the only genetic diseases of trisomy where you have three three chromosomes of one. So like sex chromosomes, or if you have like for instance, trisomy 21 is Down syndrome. And that's another trisomy that people, where the baby actually lives and can live a full, healthy life. And most trisomies are lethal and the baby does not come to term. So it's very interesting to see which ones the baby can survive, because it is very rare. And why is it that certain trisomies don't affect the body as much? And really, they, you know, trisomy 21, Down syndrome, people can live an independent, healthy life. And so it kind of boggles my mind. And it's very interesting to see that some trisomies, the baby can live on, become an adult and everything, while other trisomies, the baby doesn't even make it to, you know, a certain point in the pregnancy. So that's very interesting. And maybe later on, I will go more into that. But that wraps up today's episode of DNA Today. You can tune in next week, Monday at 1 p.m. on WHUS.org or 91.7 FM to learn more about genetics. I am staying on air throughout winter break, so continue listening Monday at 1 p.m. Really love having you guys as an audience. If you're interested in learning more, I've got a couple links for you. DNApodcast.com is full of content, including all episodes I've broadcasted here on WHUS. Also, episodes that I've done previously before coming to WHUS, so there's a couple gems on there you can find. Mostly mini lessons, even some debates on there about bioethics. And there's a ton of resources on there to expand your genetic knowledge. University of Utah is one of the best resources that I've found and been able to learn a lot from. So that's definitely my number one recommendation. But that's all on the website, dnapodcast.com. You can also follow on Twitter at DNA Podcast. I like to post links to different resources that I'm kind of looking at, or news stories that I talk about on here. I'll post links to, and sometimes even before the show, so you can kind of get a glimpse of what I'll be talking about. And no promises if I'll end up talking about that on the show, but definitely a possibility. And if you're interested in just following me, I'm at Kira Dineen, K-I-R-A-D-I-N-E-E-N. That's also on Twitter. And if you have a question you want answered on air, shoot me an email at info@dnapodcast.com. And if you can't remember all this information is on the website, dnapodcast.com. And again, I'm still broadcasting through winter break, so continue listening Monday at 1 p.m. and every Monday at 1 p.m. So thanks for listening, and join me next week again at Monday 1 p.m. to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.